Hi.
Hi.
When you were describing the hat and the garb that they wear, you said the phrase Amun-Ra. Mm-hmm. And I've heard of that, and I've seen that phrase, but yet I don't know anything about it. Could you please give me a brief description of what that's a, what it is?
Amun-Ra was the, Amun-Re, the creator god of Thebes originally. There was Ra or Re and Amun, and they were put together to be Amun-Re. But the two crowns of Upper and Lower Egypt, one of Upper Egypt is identical to a bishop's mitre. The hieroglyph was pretty much a picture of someone wearing this mitre of Upper Egypt, and that became the hieroglyph for Amun-Ra, and would looks identical to a picture of a bishop.
Thank you very much.
I was wondering about the Mason symbol, like the square with the compass and a G in the middle.
Yeah, the G in the middle is just a bit of decoration to represent God, because the only qualification that you have to be a Mason is to be in male Freemason, to be a man and 21 years old, and to believe in God, any single monotheistic God you like. But the symbols are quite important, really, because the square and compasses are sort of overlap, sort of like that.
Yeah, so that was kind of like the Star
yeah,
of David.
That's exactly what they are. They are the seal of Solomon, or Star of David, without the horizontal bars. You take the two horizontal bars away, and that's the Masonic symbol. Hmm. So it is subtly exactly that, which is in fact the symbol of the joint Messiah. As Jesus said, I'm going to be both Messiahs, because the pyramid pointing upwards represents the power of the king on earth pointing up to heaven, and the other one represents the power of the priest from heaven pointing down to earth. So the priestly and kingly Messiahs are represented in those two triangles superimposed. It gives you a single Messiah. And I think it's not coincidence that that same shape is formed by the square and compasses of Freemasonry.
Yes, in your research, have you come across a correlation between the Rosicrucians and the Masons? And if you have, can you speak about Saint Germain's role in the Masons?
There is a very clear connection, and it's so enormous I've stayed away from it. It's an honest answer. There are certain areas which you can imagine this sort of scale of research has thrown up some huge things which we've just got to say, yeah, that's there, get to that a bit later. The Rosicrucians is just such a huge area. It's undoubtedly heavily connected, but I'll come back in a couple of years' time and talk about that one, I think. Sorry.
Anything about Saint Germain?
No, sorry.
Thank you.
I noticed as you were going through your chronology of the First Crusade, the Knights Templar formation and all that, there was a kind of a laying out of a certain period of time. And I was wondering if that chronology in any way correlates with 33 degrees of Freemasonry.
There are various ways that people have tried to look at the significance of the number 33. The Roman Catholic priest that I made reference to believes it's a deeply significant figure in the history of the world between various messiahs and leaders and between various terrible people like Genghis Khan and Hitler, that it can be broken down on patterns of 66 and 33, and that there is a significance in it in that way. I haven't checked the calculations, but there are some remarkable patterns, I have to say. I don't think anything as recent as the chronology around the Templars would be involved there, because I think anything that they've got is referring to things that are far more ancient. They wouldn't view their own activities as being very important. But the period between 1100 and 1118 is a very interesting period, but I don't think they would have built a significance into it.
No way, for example, correlating even the first year of the Crusade as your first level and so on through. Nothing even as simple as that.
Well, no, I think that they were reconstructing the old Jerusalem church way of doing things. They were not trying to create anything new for themselves. They were just trying to reinstall the old ways as accurately as they could, which is why they needed the documentation. Because also this French informant told us that the genealogies of each family are carved into the walls beneath Herod's temple. So for them to get details of their own family history, they had to get under there. And I think most of the things that they would have adopted would have been extremely ancient and not in reference to themselves. But who knows?
Thank you.
You mentioned briefly in passing the practice and study of alchemy, and I know from reading Fulcanelli's book, The Mystère de Cathédrale, that the whole temple, the cathedrals all over that were built by the Templars are just replete with the symbolism that ties in with the study and the work of alchemy. And through some of my own other research, I've often wondered if some of the knowledge of the scrolls would have this knowledge of alchemy as well.
Jay-Z was mentioning this earlier today to me, and it sounds to me to be extremely likely. It isn't something I've thought about before, but I think there are reasons to think that that could well be the case. It would qualify as being amongst their most important information, remembering that those scrolls that they had to put there were the really seriously important ones. I think that would qualify. So it would explain, I guess, how they came across such knowledge to do the things that they did in the French cathedrals. How did they build them? How did they understand the, you know, it was just amazing what they achieved.
And where their wealth came from, sort of almost instantaneously.
That's right.
Along that line, you talked about Qumran, and recently I heard, and I haven't really tracked down, that Qumran may possibly have also been a factory, a metals factory in the alchemical tradition. Have you heard anything in that way?
I think I have heard something of that. Certainly, some of the early ideas about Qumran are not correct, the scriptorium and things. It wasn't a place where they necessarily wrote these scrolls. They were doing something there, but we can't be... I don't think there's significant evidence in any direction. The things thrown open again to what their real motivations were with these great water chambers and things. They were certainly doing something something significant there. But I think it's open to debate. Maybe again when we find these scrolls buried in Scotland, it'll shed some light on that.
Are you going to be able to excavate at Rosalind?
I'm doing my level best at the moment. I mean, the powers that be have to be persuaded, and they're all very friendly. And what I'm going to do very shortly is sort of distill the core of the academic argument within here to publish a paper to challenge the Scottish authorities to do something about it. Historic Scotland, who are responsible for all ancient monuments, are very sympathetic, but they want Scottish archaeologists to be involved. Now, I've got English archaeologists and English biblical scholars behind me. I mean, Professor Philip Davies went as far as to say, those scrolls are here. You know, a world-class Dead Sea Scrolls scholar. He said, I believe they're here. They must be retrieved. So it's a case of getting the right academics on board, getting the politicians behind it, and bending the ear of the Earl who of Roslyn, who owns the place, who's a bit cynical or a bit removed. He's a police officer in another part of England, a senior police officer, and not particularly involved. The direct descendant of William Sinclair that built it, Baron Sinclair Bunder, is a great ally and friend. And it's gluing together, but I mean, those scrolls have been there a long time. They can wait a few more months, sort of thing.
Thank you.
Hello, Christopher.
Hi.
question I have is, you mentioned the families of the bloodline coming down through, and they're in Europe. What relationship do they have to the 13 families that run the world today? Or do you know?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a connection.
If, in that case, if there is a connection, it's my understanding that these 13 families that run the world are controlled by off-planet entities, or there's a lot of pressure being applied or knowledge being given to these families to control us.
Well,
have you even thought about looking into that?
No. is the simple answer. That could be a way of post-rationalizing how they come to have this power. Another way would be to say that they have just been these wise people for thousands of years, and their knowledge has been used well, and it would get them into a position of power. But increasingly, I've never had even the time greatly to think about extraterrestrial influences, but I have to say that I've got other bits of evidence that come to me now which cause me to consider them quite seriously.
Thank you very much.
My question concerns something you mentioned about this country was founded under some of the principles of Freemasonry, which was interesting because I've seen a few books with pictures of George Washington and his regalia.
That's right.
And those books that I saw those in were sort of conspiratorial based on, you know, all this stuff that I'm not an expert on, but you also mentioned the skull and bones, which were a part of it, and they've, you know, these books, same books, point to like guys like George Bush having been members of secret societies at Harvard and Yale that were skull and bone society, and he was a Mason. And so there's a lot of that sort of imagery and sort of aspects of the powers that be in this country, and that, you know, also in other aspects of Europe and whatnot that sort of are controlling the field. And I was wondering if you had any answers on that.
Well, I think certainly it's correct. I believe George Bush was a Freemason, so was John Wayne. You know, I mean, there's quite a few around, Henry Ford, and it's very easy to be negative about it, because it appears to be secretive, and if you don't understand something, you don't trust it. And they might be picking on me. You know, the unknown is always a bit of a threat, which is the folly of the false secrecy that surrounds Freemasonry. They shouldn't do that. Of course, it upsets people, and hopefully that will change. George Washington and just about everybody else involved with the foundation of the United States were Freemasons, but that's positive and not negative.
I wasn't really questioning whether it was positive or negative. I was just wondering if I was going to ask you if that was you'd mentioned that this was most of the Freemasonry in the United States was based on the change in London and not on the ancient rite of Scotland. Would that be the case here?
Yes, it would. But the principles that were in the, because that of course at the time that George Washington became a Freemason, the battle between the ancients and the moderns was well underway, so both were coexisting, but the rituals had already been sort of dumped there. The ancients were trying to refine them. And George Washington was a Scottish Rite Freemason, so he probably had some better quality rituals in those days, but they would not have been the really original ones.
Okay. Just one last thing with getting back to the skull and bones. Is there a connection with pirates? You sort of said when they sailed out of that a harbor and yeah. Disappeared. It seems like there's sort of a connection with the Caribbean pirates and everything.
I think they disappeared across to the east coast of the United States and the Spanish Main, and they thought it was fair game to pick on any ships that gave allegiance to the Pope, and I think others then adopted their flag for simple piracy. Whether they were involved or not, it became the symbol of piracy.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for coming. You stirred up a lot of thoughts.
That's good.
Of course, I'm sure in all of us. And some of them are things that we have heard before, or at least I certainly have. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Jesus. It seems to me some of the information that you're giving is trying to demythicize Jesus Christ. And indeed, again, some of that information we've heard from other sources. And yet, to not look at him as a Christus, or as Christus, mm-hmm. Seems to go against some other, certainly some important books that we've read here in the school, The Nine Faces of Christ, Masters of the Far East. Certainly our teacher, Ramtha, has talked a lot about Jesus. Can you comment about that side of it? And whether how that might dovetail?
All I can report is what I'm finding. Obviously, I'm putting my interpretation on certain things. But what we have written about is what we believe was occurring. And there is the evidence to support it, that it was a political movement of a passionate spiritual people that wanted their God with them, and they were using pragmatic means to do it, and the idea of resurrection would be quite disgusting to a Jew of Jerusalem at that time and at any time before or since. It just couldn't be that Christ was resurrected. I mean,
well, I'm not speaking specifically about the resurrection, because indeed there's been numerous evidence in also other books talking about that whole drama mm-hmm. as being a symbol, as opposed to a reality. But I'm talking more about looking at the figure, if you will, as, from a spiritual perspective as opposed from an intellectual one.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. And not particularly the crucifixion and or the resurrection, but the symbol of a man becoming the Christus.
Well, that's a piece of symbolism that just runs through the history of mankind,
mm-hmm.
And he's one of many.
He's one of many. Yes.
What I think it's for individuals to assess the spirituality of the situation. And dealing somewhat with cold facts and looking at cold history here.
Yes.
My personal interpretation of the facts that as I found them is that he was one hell of a guy, that he mm-hmm. really was very, very special, that created a wholesale change. And that's the change that he created is more important than the symbolism of what I think was a cock-up, basically. I think it mm-hmm. went badly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the symbol is not the important point here for me, but I think anyone's free to draw from that what they want.
Okay, thanks.
Hi.
Hi.
I believe that the treatment of women as lesser being goes on way back before the time of Jesus, but addressing that issue in relationship to the time, that time period, and to Mary Magdalene, do you feel that, did she continue the teaching of James and Jesus and or in southern France? And do you know if James actually came with her? And was Paul the primary force behind giving women a bad rap in the Bible?
I don't think Paul was, to take the question backwards, I don't think Paul was because his principal priest was a woman. Thecla. I think that's something that came a little later. Regarding the connection of Jesus with France that is often spoken about, I don't know of any evidence to support any connection with France for anyone involved in first century Jerusalem personally.
There is in southern France findings I can't remember the name of the town, but there's a small church, and supposedly before the Inquisition, that the bloodline and Mary Magdalene was gathered in that area, or the descendant of Mary Magdalene and her children was gathered in that area and continued the teaching, not as an open church, but just living it in daily life.
As best I can determine, that is false information and isn't accurate. Now, obviously, I can be wrong because history is complicated stuff, but as best I can determine, that isn't correct. And that has arisen out of, out of misunderstandings about what we would call the Rex Dias families, the families that had come from the priesthood of Jerusalem and may well have been related to the family of Jesus because he was one of them. But I don't think there was anything as clear-cut as that has been suggested concerning Renzo Le Chateau.
Okay, thank you.
That's all the questions.
Great. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.